Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have another Justified runover tonight. We're getting ready to do our Justified recap in real time, myself and FDH Senior Editor Jason Jones. So please bear with us here as I apparently alone will have to slog through. Jason is still catching up. Plus, like I said, we have a final segment to go. Decent amount that's happened tonight. It's been a pretty good episode. The hunt for the missing heroin coming up from Mexico, a big thing. And apparently, Raylan and Art have some kind of a coming to terms going on here in this scene. And so Art's making a phone call. He's going to check up on something pertaining to the case. Danny Crow is now past tense. We have finally now the confrontation with Ava and with Judith. And ultimately, you got to think there's a decent chance that Ava bites it in the scene here. I know it's a lot to say. It's a mouthful, but Ava may not make it out of this scene alive. If they're setting her up to be killed, they've done a pretty good job of it right down to her final conversation, what would be her final conversation with Boyd. It would be another jailhouse shanking, just like we saw last season with Arlo. This Judith is for real. You know, this Judith is not somebody you want to take on, whether or not you're the person coming in with a shiv. She, quite frankly, is likely to have one herself. So, calling the shot right here. Ava may not make it out alive. But, well, oh, now Ava's saying she's not going to. So, Ava's figured out what the game is. Okay. Very interesting. But Ava's pretty much getting used to life in jail. She's pretty much now fully immersed, or prison, state prison, it now is. Whoa, I think I might have spoke too soon. Whoa. I definitely spoke too soon. Ava is in mortal danger in this scene. Ava, whoa, she's grabbing for the shiv. Whoa! Ava with the shiv, down goes Judith. Whoa! That's a real game changer here, right? Ava's not getting out of jail after this one. Trying to cover your tracks, Ava. Nah, it's going to work. The body count's just getting a little bit too high with Ava Crowder these days. Now, granted, she's not the one that actually, she was framed for what happened that put her there, but she killed Gilroy, which is what got her in jail in the first place. She killed Judith, apparently, even though it was pretty much in self-defense. Judith came after her. So, and Boyd has no idea of any of this. And now Boyd's got himself all sit down here. Very, very interesting. I'm looking to see here, so. Boyd is dealing with somebody. Oh, that's who this guy is. Okay. I didn't recognize him at first. That's the guard. Well, I hate to tell you, Boyd, but, you know, you're one body behind on this sumbitch here. Is Ava apparently just killed somebody else. So even if this guy recants, that's the thing with Ava. She keeps getting in more and more and more over her head. And Boyd is... So he's clearly, and he references here with this guy trying to unring the bell. You know, the bell cannot be unrung in terms of what happened with Ava. He's going back to Ava having, I hate to say, you know, even dumped him at the beginning of the episode because it was, she felt like she was doing it for his good, for her good, and because she was fatalistic about ever making it out a free woman. But Boyd is, he hasn't given up trying. Ava wanted him to. He hasn't given up trying. And if something good is still possible for Ava, then she will thank him for this. But that ship may very well have sailed. This is, Boyd is saying that the guard just told Boyd that he did that to Ava because he loved her. And apparently Johnny Crowder, you go back to last season, that was his reason, I guess. I don't know how much to put on that as far as truthfulness goes. The power of Ava Crowder. Wow, even behind bars. Able to get men to do these kind of things. Very, very interesting. I don't think it's going to change Boyd's mind any. Boyd's going to let him walk, but I didn't get any sense that he had any leverage that the guy was going to recant on that. And now Wendy's telling Daryl that it's time to leave. Time to leave Kentucky. Unsurprisingly, Daryl's not going for it. Presumably, Braylon made it off with the drugs. Presumably, the other half of the heroin is in federal custody. So, the end game here in the last three episodes is going to be very interesting because if the heroin is no longer a possibility for the Crows, there's no longer anything they're doing with Boyd, then I don't even know how they're in each other's orbits here at this point. Certainly not as allies. So Whoa! Wendy punches Daryl. Daryl punches Wendy right back. Whoa. And they're going at it. They're going at it at this point. Whoa. I'm wondering if Kendall comes walking in on this. Kendall. Yeah. Well. Well, Daryl got Kendall to go along with him on that. Seriously? Going to the Blood Brothers card? Ugh.
Wow. No secrets between them. A very unhygienic backwoods kind of deal, like you would expect from a couple of backwoods Everglades dudes. Curveball just threw me because I thought that I thought Kendall was going to end up killing Dirtle right here. I really did. But, okay, we're up to what is going to be the coming attractions. And so this final segment here. Oh, and I see Jason is on the phone lines throwing me a lifeline here after an interminable final segment here, half kind of analyzing, half kind of just talking the way through it here until we could get this going in earnest. So it's going to be good to be able to bring him on here and get to the meat of what we wanted to be discussing tonight. It is going to be, I think, a very fun recap that we have for you. So let's just hit the reset button here now that I have Jason on the phone lines. Welcome, everyone, to mini-episode number 396 of the FDH Lounge, here to break down Justified episode 5.10. And another runover episode tonight, and a lot of action that went down, and still some twists and turns materializing for this season. And I think at this point, still a season that seems kind of hazy as far as direction, especially relative to the way the last couple have gone. But I am very much looking forward to seeing what my man Jay Jones thinks about it here tonight. So, Jason, what were your thoughts on 5.10? I thought it had action and plot moving forward like it did from 5.9 and like maybe it didn't the previous couple of weeks. But what was your sense of what we're heading towards?
Well, first, my initial first thought was I wonder what these cynical, greedy fans not willing to let things develop. Think of that one, because I thought it was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I don't have a one-line answer for you for what I think this episode meant going forward, because clearly a lot of things happened. I'll just throw this out there real quick. I'm becoming a bigger and bigger fan of Kendall up until the last minute there with the John Batiste revelation. That was fun. But a lot of stuff happened, clearly, from Ava to maybe a softer side of Boyd showing its face to we're coming back to the Raylan art situation, and then the Crow family crest sort of coming to a hilt throughout the episode a couple times. So tons of stuff happened.
I'll be perfectly honest. During the overrun part there when I was really kind of having to multitask a little bit, I didn't fully get that. I'm assuming that Raylan was able to bring in the dope from Danny Crow, right? I'm assuming that basically they did get that half the shipment in federal custody. Is that what that was about?
Yeah, I don't think they showed it. You know, you were doing the heavy lifting, but I'm running around trying to find the phone so I can call in. I cannot imagine that we see, I'm drawing blank already, what's his face, take a knife to the throat in his 21-foot rule. And then there's no one else there, so why would he not just kind of – I just assume that he picked up the bag and walked off. So unless I missed something there.
I would assume so. That was my thinking, and that did end in an unexpected kind of a way. I mean, maybe a little bit of a foreshadowing from early on, the whole thing about, oh, you know, go dig the grave for the dog. Yeah, I guess in that way that it was a little bit sort of foreseen as far as what might happen. But looking now in real time here at the coming events here for next week and the way that things are going to break down, you have a real splintering, it seems like, now, undeniably, with the Crows on one side. I mean, Daryl Crow is of no use to Boyd at this point. The only thing that he really succeeded in doing was getting half the shipment pinched. So you still have him out there. And a real interesting question, I thought, that was posed tonight from Picker to Wynn Duffy about his thoughts on Boyd, why he puts the kind of trust in him that he does, at least relatively speaking, as far as honor among thieves. Now, again, Picker wasn't there for moments like Boyd's big speech and coming to the rescue of
when during the whole meeting with the drug dealers earlier this season, the town hall meeting with the drug dealers, as I like to call it. He wasn't there to see the magic of Boyd Crowder in circumstances like that, but it's very interesting to see Boyd having to now reconsider this alliance that he's had with Boyd, and having the thought put to him by the old mob widow who was brought back here tonight, an inspired bit of casting there, and it was Mary Steenburgen. It's going to be really, really intriguing, I got to think, to see how that shakes out, and if the Boyd-Wynn alliance might be on borrowed time potentially.
You know, throughout our show, and as we've discussed earlier with other type podcasts or type recaps, not everyone is willing to have the discussion of what could happen, what might happen, for fear of being wrong. And I think sometimes the conversation is the most enjoyable part. So sort of roll with this for a second. In one of those efforts to say something that I don't necessarily think is going to be true, or I'm not inclined to believe that I'm right about this, they keep doing this. They keep bringing up these little things that I think are designed for you not to pay too close attention, and eventually one of them is going to be right. But when we had that conversation with Picker and Duffy, regardless of the idea that you just laid out, that Picker just doesn't have the familiarity and he hasn't been there in the trenches with Boyd to know that Boyd's legit, it kind of lends me to believe that maybe as we keep trying to forecast what is the end game, what happens if the Crow thing works itself out and they're not in Harlan County? Boyd is no longer, whether that means he's moved away, he's in prison, or he's dead. The possibility that the bigger players here that are not from Harlan County, like the Wynn Duffys of the show and the Pickers, then maybe they just say, you know what, Kentucky just ain't worth it. Let's just get out of Dodge, thus being the end of the story. I mean, you know, we've always come back to the idea that it's probably something that happens with Raylan that ends the story, but is it possible that we are watching a story unfold from Raylan's perspective, even if the story is more about everything else? Because that, I think that was a huge indication of something. Either Picker's going to go away, and I think everyone will be fine with that, or Duffy's going to have to come up with some crossroads and sever ties with Boyd Crowder, which would be much more impactful. And I can't help but think that that might have been some sort of Easter egg hint to something bigger that we're not ready for yet.
That could very well be. That could be part of the end game of the series. I could see that being a scenario where it plays out that way. And again, yeah, I think in terms of, and that would be like at the very, very end game part of it, if Boyd was no longer in this, because Raylan and Boyd are going to continue to be the sort of dual focus of this thing all the way through. But yeah, as far as how they look at it, and it's very interesting also, I mean, that you and I, again, as proof that we're not just blind fanboys for the show, where I think we've a little bit kind of taken them to task, is on, as I referenced last week, the Clover Hill storyline and sort of some of the depictions about Harlan and how it relates to reality. Like if you go to Google Earth and you look around, or if you've driven through that part of Kentucky, and I'll take that a step further, that they're really making this rural corner of Kentucky on the Virginia border to almost be like the crime center of the universe. And it's amusing on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's kind of like, wait a minute. Guys from Detroit, like Picker, are going to be down there. And I understand there's something to be said for it as far as, you know, transport areas, or I guess that part of Kentucky was always big for weed growing, but we're not even talking about weed dealing this season at all. That's not even really in the mix. So the whole notion of how Harlan has come to be almost the center of the universe for these shady types, that's another one of these things where you just got to suspend your disbelief a little bit.
Yeah. if, as you said, mentioned the Google Earth thing, I actually Googled it myself just to see. And it's, yeah, it's much more rural than they show it to be. But you bring up a great point. And I think ultimately the idea here is let's create a story where we can go to this little place that no one's ever heard of and show through the veneer of this rural backwoods area that, you know, stuff's going down. But in actuality, I think you're right. If there was some crime syndicate that is looking to branch out from greater metropolis of Detroit or anywhere else that, you know, has more than a couple stoplights, that Harlan County would not be an appealing place for them to go. I mean, if we're talking, you know, if the big crime lords of Raleigh, North Carolina wanted to branch out, then maybe,
right.
You know, maybe they say, oh, here's this little podunk place that we can exploit. But you're not getting big Detroit down there. You're probably not even going to get Little Rock, Arkansas over there because they're too big time. So, yeah, there is a sense of disbelief that you've got to get past. But once you do, you know, we just kind of ride it out and enjoy the story. But to your point, yeah, we're not going to sit by and just take everything at face value. Take it all with a grain of salt and we move on. But the whole thing about I want you to take a look at these two and sort of make a decision for me going forward, it could be big. Could be a big stepping stone towards something. And I don't know about you, but I was watching The West Wing earlier in the week, and there was a line, and I won't bother you with the specifics, where they say, you know, why are you doing electoral college math? And I think what we tend to do with this show is sometimes we're looking at it going, there's only three more episodes. Yeah, you start counting down the episodes, like, this has got to be something. And I think this has got to be something.
Well, it's really been kind of, as we've been saying all along in different ways, abstract art this season. We're trying to get a focus on what's happening, and it's just been much more opaque than the last couple of years. I mean, it's almost clear now in retrospect that the sort of progression of the heroin up from Mexico and the aftermath of that and trying to make its way to Harlan, to whatever extent, because if you think back, we always talk about the big episode from last year, the decoy episode 4.10. Well, this was 5.10 tonight, the exact same part of the season. So I will say again, if the heroin shipment is this year's Drew Thompson, then I am feeling kind of underwhelmed because, again, this season is not, to me, bigger and more epic than last year. They're interrupting the streak of making it bigger and more epic. Now, again, maybe they're pacing themselves to make season six bigger and more epic, but I will say this. The standard that I hold this show to is shows like Breaking Bad at the upper levels of great TV shows ever. Breaking Bad didn't have to pace itself. The last eight episodes are probably the best eight. And the ones before that might be the second best eight. And season four is probably the third best season, and so on. So I'm not really down on this season, except from the perspective of I expect it to be epic at the end of the year. I'm not one of these people, and we'll talk about this in a little bit again here, some of these folks who complain that not every episode is epic. The last 2 weeks have really been good. I have no complaints, and I agreed with you when it happened. The ones that weren't as epic in between as far as developments, they were there, they were placeholders, they were setting things up, they were useful, if not hugely enthralling. But we're getting close enough to the end of the season here where I'm about to pronounce judgment and say, I don't think to me this is going to be better than season four, and I'm disappointed in that.
Well, you know, with that, I've got another idea. We kind of toyed with this earlier. It's not going to fit because the movies I'm going to mention aren't the kind of movies that people that enjoy Justified would watch. But like Harry Potter, for instance, had their final movie. There was so much
mm-hmm.
information that you had to have part one and part two. To combine, they're, you know, 4 hours and change. So what I'm thinking is happening is one of two things will occur. One, the end of season five will be epic. You'll be satisfied to a point. You might still say it's not as good as season four, and that would absolutely be, pardon me the pun, justified. But the other option is that there's so much that they wanted to cover with these storylines in a closing manner that season five is essentially part one of the conclusion. And in any movie where they do a final chapter in part one and movie part two dramatically kicks part one's ass, like not even close. So my thought is, if at the end of season five we feel dramatically underwhelmed and that we didn't kind of get the closure on certain things that we were hoping for, I think that that's only because they're setting up season six to be, you know, to use your Breaking Bad analogy, just one episode after the other is just insane until we build up to a conclusion that everyone is satisfied with. I personally hope that season five is epic, but I'm also reserving judgment that maybe it's a setup for season six. And if that's the case, it's artistically creative. And in that case, then season five is not a letdown for me, because then it would have just met expectation.
Well, and I don't want to be the one that leads us too much off the reservation here in terms of big picture stuff. But if you're going for greatest of all time, if you really want to be considered for that as far as TV dramas go, you know, I'll just go back to my point about Breaking Bad. You know, mm-hmm. you have to take my word for it because you're not at that point yet. But the eight episodes before the final eight were not placeholders. There were big epic things happening there. That was arguably the second best stretch of episodes that you had. You know, season 5A and 5B, as they call it. I think it was really more like seasons 5 and 6. But regardless, they didn't do that with Breaking Bad. They didn't have to. They didn't have to take a knee and say, we're going to sacrifice a little bit to make the end of it kind of epic. And it's just a matter of my respect for this show. I consider this show to be a contender for greatest of all time. So if it seems like I'm harshing on them, it's because of the standard that I'm holding them to, which really could not be higher.
You know, it's funny about this is Breaking Bad, it's, and I haven't finished it, and I haven't gotten anywhere near where you're talking about. I just saw recently Jesse say, get out of here and don't ever come back again, which is like 20th time I think I've heard that.
Right.
But, so I'm not there yet. But I think that Breaking Bad was the Vince Carter of the slam dunk contests, if you will. It readjusts the scale. So I think if you take Breaking Bad out of the equation, then I think absolutely you're talking about Justified being up there in the annals of greatness or whatever. I actually think this is one of those times where it's almost not fair to compare Breaking Bad. Like, they should have their own tier, and not everybody gets that. Not everybody that's seen it understands, but I watch a lot of TV, and I'm very critical about a lot of TV, and a lot of it, every episode, I'm like, oh, that was really good, or with Justified, I'm like, ugh, why do I have to wait a whole week to get to the next one? But with Breaking Bad, even though I'm taking my sweet time getting through it, every single episode, every last one of them, literally has me yelling at the TV when the credits roll. I think it's on a whole other level. It amazes me that the subject content of that show can be so dramatically impressive. But I almost think it's not fair to use Breaking Bad in this regard, because they literally, lightning in a bottle, whatever you want to say about it, was phenomenal. With that said, I think you're right. There was never a moment that I've seen to this point where it was just sort of, we have to make an episode to make an episode to get to the next one. With that said, though, I think I still, with or without Breaking Bad in the equation, I still put Justified easily in the top five of the current era, and then anything beyond that is worth debate.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe it's unfair of me to compare it in that way. And since we made,
I think Breaking Bad is really that good.
Oh yeah, yeah. No question about it. And like I said, that's how idealistic I am about Justified. That I want to be comparing it to Breaking Bad. I'm an idealistic fan, and I want them to be as great as Breaking Bad. And I'm just disappointed whenever I see that it may come up short. And again, three episodes yet to go this season. And again, I'm going to forego my Shield crossover for tonight. A, because I think I've exhausted my material in that the last couple of weeks, the things I could say about Walt Goggins from both shows. And B, because you and I think did a good job there of tying in some Breaking Bad parallels. Again, it's always fun to compare the top shows and things that they have in common and things that, where they kind of separate themselves a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about tonight before, again, I'm going to surprise you towards the end here. I'm going to bring up a point referencing something we talked about last week that I think you are going to be surprised and impressed with in a way that, again, you certainly would not anticipate. But as far as it goes tonight, we had Boyd's Travails The heroin never ended up making its way there successfully because Dewey Crow pretty much went Dewey Crow. You had the whole thing with Ava in prison there. Everything continues to escalate. Boyd was trying to solve her last problem by getting the guard to recant here, but with Ava, the body count just keeps piling up. And whether or not she was actually going to take out Judith, Judith forced the matter. And Ava had to go for the shiv in self-defense, but she ain't going to get away with that. It's Ava. These things just keep getting worse for her. So you've got that going on. And, again, the plot did kind of advance itself very strongly tonight, plus all of the tensions within the Crow family really coming to the fore with Kendall, with his mom, and with Daryl. And as we mentioned before, Danny in the 21-foot role didn't survive the night.
Yeah, it's tough when a crossover actors like that fall literally to such a sad state, the way
yes.
Danny Crow saw his light go out. There were a lot of things here, and I'll be honest, I didn't even think about what you said about Ava. I was just, you know, as the fan absorbing it as it happens, I was just really excited that Ava got out of there alive. I didn't even stop to think, you know, what happens when the guard comes to tell Judith time's up and Judith
right.
ain't breathing. So, wow, yeah. Ava's, it's almost like Ava's just not good at being a bad guy. I just don't know how that's going to go. I will say this, and I try to bring up one of these for every one of your S.H.I.E.L.D. crossovers. Ava looked, shall I say, impressive when she pulled off her blood-soaked khaki button-up shirt, unveiling the little white thermal, sort of walked
yes.
out of there. That was rather impressive. Not important to the plot in any way, but nice nonetheless.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, you bring up a lot of points that happened. This is why I hope all the other shows and all the other fans out there are happy with today's episode, is that there was a lot that happened. The guard thing with Boyd, the guy that basically got Ava in the position she's in, that whole scene almost like threw me for a loop. He said, "I love her," whatever, and I literally said out loud, "Oh, you're dead. Dead, you're dead." And the exact opposite happened. So that was crazy. Seeing Daryl Crow Jr. going all out against his sister, not only is that strike one on the guys hitting girls, but it's family, which is making it doubly
yeah.
worse. So if anybody thought that Daryl Crow Jr. was a likable bad guy, I'm pretty sure that's over with.
Right.
I love the fact that we saw, who's the guy that Dewey went to go see?
Oh, yeah.
From season two. I had this stuff up
yeah,
so
I
wouldn't go blank. Anyway, so we had
about.
That.
Yeah.
We had that whole situation. I was kind of hoping that that would bring back in the Bennett family storyline. Maybe there's a thing that will start.
I
did
wish,
enjoy that
he's
sort
the only,
of Tarantino.
He's the only Bennett left, unfortunately.
Nah, okay. I did enjoy the sort of Tarantino-esque shades of Reservoir Dogs thing where you got three guys all pointing a gun at each other and how that went down. So lots of things happened. It was exciting. But I think we're left knowing no more than we did when the episode started, which makes for an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying this season. I mean, if they're taking a knee in any way to set up for next year, it's not a deliberate thing. And they've set very high standards for themselves the last couple of seasons. And again, we have to see how it's going to play out. It is entirely clear at this point. The structure is different than it was from last year, where everything built to 4.10, the decoy episode. And everything after that was a slow sort of aftermath. Still very meaningful, still very action-packed, still had us on the edge of our seats for a good part of the time, but it was peaking, the whole season was, to Drew Thompson getting captured and then subsequently out of Harlan alive. We're still working our way up the roller coaster here. We're at 5'10", and we're going to need 5'11", 5'12", and probably 5'13", to be epic if this is a season that we're you're really happy with by our high standards, I would certainly think, that the high standards that we have for this show. And as far as it goes with Raylan and some of the character development with him that we've been keeping an eye on through the season, I mean, he's been more involved in the action the last 2 weeks, but for a good part of the year, it's really been the sort of character of him that we've been talking about, because he has not been involved in the ongoing plots very much. So I want to reference something we talked about last week. Last week, burying, I think justifiably, no pun intended, the good folks over at the Hollerback podcast, Joanna Robinson and Ryan McGee, who, as I've said, I think do a good, very good job generally with their podcast covering Justified. But after 5.8, just mailed it in with a three-minute one. They crapped on the show. This isn't even worth our time. We don't want to talk about it, blah, blah, blah. You and I called them out last week, and justifiably. I listened to their thing last week. I wanted to see if they were going to bounce back, and they did. I thought it was a strong show. Joanna Robinson actually said something that I thought was really, really impressive. And I actually, and you're a little bit harder to impress with other people's takes than I am. I've kind of noticed that, but I think you're going to be impressed with this as well. I'm going to set this up for you. Now, what I'm also going to say is, one more I told you so to Joanna, because she found something to comment on out of 5.8. And you and I were saying that at the time. It was not a completely worthless episode, even if you didn't like the way it was going, because it's going to bear fruit later on. Well, it only took her 1 week to find the fruit that it was bearing, at least in this way. But it's an impressive take. Okay, 5.8. You got the scenes in there with Raylan and with Kendall, right? And he gives them the couple grand. He gives them the $2,000 or whatever it was that he had won there, and takes pity on the kid. He gives them a pep talk about, you got a chance to make it out just like I did. Well, then the thing last week with him, and as we took great pleasure in calling him last week, DEA agent Eric Roberts, and we were talking about how they were a great pair on there and very well matched and very similar and everything like that, but he's sort of like an older version of Raylan, I guess, if you sort of look into a mirror 10, 15 years down the road, maybe. Well, Joanna Robinson's point, which I really thought was impressive, was that as part of the ongoing sort of character discovery that Raylan's going through this year, post Arlo's death, post close call with Winona and the baby, or Winona and the baby, and moving away, post all of that and dealing with his own crap, that with Kendall in 5.8, you had the ghost of Raylan past, and in 5.9, with DEA agent Eric Roberts, the ghost of Raylan future, and that Raylan may be forced to contemplate. It was clear that Raylan saw a lot of himself in Kendall. I don't know how much we got a sense last week of how much he saw himself in the Eric Roberts character or not, but I think she put her finger on something, and I find it to be very, very interesting. And, again, that's the kind of analysis I would have liked to have heard from him on the podcast post 5.8, but better late than never. But I thought she had a great point. How do you assess that, Jason?
Well, going back to the original issue with them in 5.8, one of the things they mentioned was, who is this guy with Kendall in the parking lot, and why do I care? And
yes,
that
yes.
Is sort of almost an extension of what you're talking about, because if you look at it, if we are to assume in any shape or fashion that Kendall represents, young Raylan coming up in a family that's anything but clean, doesn't that mean that Jack is Arlo on some scale? So it's absolutely
Ooh.
Important, and it deserves
yeah.
some sort of connection. If Jack's not Arlo, you can bet your ass that Daryl is. So,
yes,
wherever you want to fit that in, however this dynamic in the nuclear family fits. But it's actually a very astute thing to contemplate, because maybe on some level, Raylan maybe more appeals towards the Kendall side of that spectrum, because he can see himself in Kendall more so than he sees future him as, what's his face? You said Roberts. So
yes.
Maybe he's not ready to wrap his finger around the idea that if he sticks with his job and he lets it tear him apart, he's going to become Eric Roberts. But he's very easily convinced that Kendall is young Raylan. I think that's not only an astute observation, but absolutely something that they probably wrote in there on purpose. I just don't think that that they've given it to us enough yet. The thing with Raylan giving the money, no big deal, you can kind of look at that and let it go. But I think that is something that they're probably going to, that they put in there on purpose. And, you know, kudos to for them for noticing. Because I think, I don't think we mentioned it, but I remember thinking, that's interesting. I didn't see that coming. I just didn't put it all together. But again, kudos to them for acknowledging it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you agree with me that that was a good take there. Because I think, you know, that's where we earn the right to call other people on the carpet. Is you know, to be fair and to say, yeah, in the same breath, wow, that was a really good thing that this other show did. And again, just to prove that we're not ankle biters, because everybody wants to play the card these days. Haters, haters! And, you know, so the fact that we can give credit where credit is due, I think is certainly a good thing. I'm going to be interested to check out Holler back again this week and see. Again, I'm sure they're going to like this episode more than they did 5.8. And, you know, hopefully they've learned, at least in retrospect, that there is value in all of these things, regardless of what you think of it emotionally at the time. But three of them yet to go for this season. As we're heading into next week, as we're taking a look ahead here, again, you really have a sort of coming apart at the seams, it seems like, with the criminals. We had the big sit-down last week, and that's going to be the high point, that United Nations moment there. I think that's going to be the high point of unity for the season amongst all of them, all the dirtbags out there with Wynn and Darryl and Boyd and Picker and all of them sitting around the table there, because it seems to me the rest of the way it's just going to be a lot of them caught in each other's crossfire. I would guess there's going to be a lot of bad ramifications for the heroin getting seized. So what do you think heading into next week, Jason? Again, it's we keep saying that it's kind of opaque compared to the last couple of years, but I still have this real kind of vibe of anything can happen at this point.
Real quick, before we run out of time, I just wanted to mention in all things Walton Goggins, and I don't think that you watch this show, but you probably should, just like everyone else. At Midnight, which has nothing to do with Justified, but is hosted, it's a game show with stand-up comics, which is hosted by the wonderful Chris Hardwick, did have Walton Goggins on this week in order to read some crazy internet thing, and it was absolutely priceless. It was serious Boyd, eloquent Boyd, reading a Craigslist listing or something. But
awesome.
I'm bringing it up is that the great Chris Hardwick took it upon himself to put over Justified, which is absolutely not in the wheelhouse of the show that he's hosting, which was nice. But getting
oh,
back
that's
to
awesome.
Your
yeah,
question.
I like that show. Great point.
Getting back to the question at hand here, what does this mean? I like you, hope it's building to something. I hope that there's something that we're just not accounting for yet, that in the next three episodes is all going to come together. Clearly, there's a rift in the Crow family, and as soon as What's-Her-Face wakes up from her beatdown, I'm sure she's going to be pissed off to find out that Darryl and Kendall had a nice little Indian handshake, and whatever that means. Where Boyd goes from here is going to be catastrophic, probably. Unless Ava can somehow get out of this situation, which doesn't look likely, I think more and more pressure is going to come down on Boyd. And Raylan and Art is still something that's unresolved. That thing went down almost a month ago, and we're still sort of living through this awkwardness of Raylan going to work and Art trying not to be pissed off all the time. So I think if it's going to end in an epic conclusion like we want, all those things are going to have to come down at once, and somebody will be left standing. I'm inclined to say that that's Raylan, but with each passing episode, that seems less likely.
Well, I think the one thing we can agree upon at this point, any remaining hope that this season is going to be more epic than season four, and yes, that's a very, very high bar, I think we need, and it's probably got to be the last episode, although I guess if it happens in one of them, it doesn't really matter, but it's probably got to be the last one. We need another All Shot to Hell. Don't we at this point? We need another 5.5, Jason. And that could, if anything could do it, it would be that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, if everything comes to a head, and they always had from the beginning the Crows was going to be a one-season situation, then, yeah, we've got to look at, you know, 5.13 or 12.